Seats podcast for Wednesday, July 2nd. I'm your host, John Lord. With me today is the founder of GolfNewsNet.com, Ryan Belangi. Happy holidays, Ryan.
Hey, likewise. Let's celebrate some freedom.
There you go. Happy Independence Day. Okay, before we get started here today, tell us a little bit more about Golf News Net Radio.
Of course. You may have actually the good fortune to hear this show over Golf News Net Radio, so this may be a little meta for you, but started this about a week or so ago, and I've had this idea going for a little while now that there needs to be a place online where people can listen to good golf talk radio without having to listen to the PGA Tour's version of golf talk radio or listen with a subscription to SiriusXM, which is excellent programming, but costs you about $10 a month to listen to one station. So we kind of came up with this idea where we could broadcast shows, live podcasted shows, taped terrestrial radio shows, raw interviews and audio, kind of NPR style without a lot of commercial breaks, without a lot of interruption, and just allow people to enjoy good golf conversation whenever they feel like listening to it.
Yeah, well, we're happy to be a part of it for sure, and enjoy talking to you and others about golf. And so with that, first thing I wanted to talk to you about today is I assume you've been watching enough of the World Cup.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and we are here to talk about golf, but my question for you today is the day after the United States loses and what is, you know, being hailed as a really incredibly memorable run in the World Cup. How can golf become more like the World Cup?
You know, I was talking about this last night with John McGinnis, and he was very nice enough to let me sub in for his partner Brian Katrick on SiriusXM, and he asked me kind of a similar question. I thought he had a really good answer in response to his own question, which was, when golf gets into the Olympics, maybe that's where golf kind of has its World Cup moment. Because the Ryder Cup is between a continent and a country, so there are only so many interested parties. The President's Cup is between the United States and every other country that's not Europe, but most of those countries don't give a crap about pro golf. But most countries do give a crap about the Olympics. And if you think about it in this country, what sports do Americans care about every 4 years during the Summer Olympics or alternatively in the Winter Olympics? Nobody cares about ice dancing except every 4 years. Nobody cares about swimming except every 4 years. Nobody remembers what the biathlon is except every 4 years. But people really get into those sports for 2 weeks because they're in the Olympics and there's jingoism. So I think jingoism will go a really long way in making golf, affording golf that moment where they can say they've got the world watching them. And in Rio, that's going to be the place where we see whether or not that takes shape or not, whether people catch on to it as a sport, or whether it's kind of a cult favorite like you might think curling is. So I don't know the answer to it. I don't know if there's a definitive action plan, but I think we get a better sense of, is the product as is good enough to do that when the games in 16 start back in Rio?
The reason I asked that question, and I'm glad others are asking the same question, is because watching the World Cup has been incredibly entertaining, and it has been the kind of experience that really unifies people and transcends all sorts of differences that we believe exist, you know, in this country. So take yesterday's game, for example. I was watching that game at home with family, but everyone in the house at the time was into the game. And it was an incredibly entertaining game. Obviously went down to the final few seconds. But it was that type of experience when you look around the room and you want to figure out what exactly makes that moment so special and how can other sports that we are interested in recreate that moment. And so when you start to think about golf, is there any event in golf that can recreate that type of passion that I certainly felt yesterday when watching the United States Belgium game? And so I also thought about things like the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup and the Olympics as well. And for me, perhaps the closest that that it ever comes to feeling golf, feeling like the World Cup has felt these last few weeks, is the Ryder Cup. But like you said, the Ryder Cup is limited because it is just two continents playing, you know, United States versus Europe. So it's kind of hard to recreate the same magic that the World Cup produces. And then I thought the other thing that the World Cup gets right and that soccer gets right is that it is an incredibly efficient sport. And golf, to me at least, one of the main problems with golf as entertainment is that it's not really efficient. It takes a really long time, and it's an investment, an incredible amount of time to watch a round of golf. And so in order for golf to be able to recreate what the World Cup has done, it's got to learn to be a little bit more efficient. What do you think about that?
I think that's a pretty interesting way to put it. I was thinking about this watching the tournament these last couple of weeks, whereas I know people complain all the time in this country, it's a low-scoring sport and it's boring. But guess what? You know soccer is over in 100 minutes most times. Unless they go to extra time, then you know it's over in 2 hours. And you can't say that about the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, or the NFL. And you definitely can't say it about golf. But you know what you're locked in for. You know for the next 2 hours, I'm watching soccer. And then it's over. And you move on with your life, which is a great thing. Golf, you watch it for like 7, 10, 12 hours, and it might still not be done. And depending on the format, you might have to watch another 4 hours the next day to get a winner. And that's just massively time-consuming. And the other thing I thought about, going back to your initial question, is people are invested in the process of the World Cup more than any other sporting event because it takes years to qualify. It's not just we're going to have this 18-hole playoff and that's going to figure out who wins or who gets in, or kind of like golf's longest day. Even golf's longest day is the culmination of a local then a sectional qualifier. And then you have the U.S. Open. So people are even a little bit more invested in that than maybe some of the other major championships because you have a process to get into it. And I think that's the difference between something like the World Cup, even the Olympics to an extent, and golf team events like the Ryder Cup, because no one pays attention to the point system until the PGA Championship, when basically we've decided on who the team's going to be.
Yeah.
So I think that if there's a way to make the process more involved over a longer period of time, over the full 2 years, than maybe just 6 weeks of those 2 years, then I think maybe you get more people's attention.
You mentioned other sports that are popular in this country, and I actually wrote about this today on View My Seats. I feel as if other sports in this country that are popular, like basketball and baseball and football, can learn a heck of a lot from watching what the World Cup has done. And the pace of play, the timeliness of these games is just so conducive to consumption. It makes it so easy to sit and enjoy knowing that there is an end in sight. And you mentioned things like the NBA playoffs, and I wrote about this today. And as entertaining as the NBA finals are and playoffs are, it is really difficult to sit and tolerate the final minutes of these basketball games because of how many stoppages in play there are. And so it started to get me thinking that if you were to take things that are so good about soccer and apply them to other sports like basketball, it could make those sports that we love that much more enjoyable. So with soccer, one of the really cool things that makes it so efficient is that there aren't any timeouts.
So I really buy into that concept.
And would you say that means that the coaches aren't as good at their jobs as NBA coaches are? Would you say that NBA players, athletes require more rest than soccer players do? I mean, that's completely false. And so if anything, we like to, in our country with basketball, we like to micromanage and we like to over strategize. Get rid of the timeouts. Let these guys just play.
Well, the thing I think about when you kind of bring that point up is that there's still coaching to it. You're just coaching in a different sense because you control the pace of the game as best you can in soccer so that you manage the time you know you're going to play. What you don't know how to manage is the time that you just can't see being added on. You don't know until the game unfolds how much extra time you're going to get to work with. So you manage to 90 minutes, and you kind of then have to again manage for the 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes added to each half. So I think that requires a lot of acumen to be able to stay on the fly. Okay, I've got 2 minutes. What can we do in 2 minutes that might affect the outcome of this game or keep the score the way we want it? Versus the NBA or in the NHL where you get the 1 timeout or the NFL where you get 3, where you know you can use timeouts to stop momentum. You can use timeouts to build momentum. Versus in soccer, you have to do it inside the game. You have to maintain the momentum as play unfolds. I think that's a more difficult task for a coach to do than to be able to stop, think, and then implement. I just find that a little bit easier.
Right. All credit to the coaches in the World Cup. And we took our 3-year-old son to his first Major League Baseball game the other day, and my expectations weren't all that high that he was going to really enjoy the product on the field, but I was amazed at how little attention he actually did spend on what was going on the field. I wasn't disappointed, and ballparks nowadays do their best to make families, keep families entertained. But as I was writing today, that baseball, a sport that I played in college, is really the sport along with golf that is feeling this time crunch. And it got me thinking, you know, with baseball, there have got to be ways to speed up play like they do in soccer. So I started to think, well, in soccer, they have a cool thing where they're only allowed 3 substitutes. And one of the big problems with baseball is that managers tend to overmanage towards the end of games, and you have so many pitching changes that it really slows down the pace of play. So why not institute some rule in baseball where you're only allowed to make 3 pitching changes a game?
I like that idea a lot, actually. I think it'd be really interesting to see how you work with a limited set of options. I mean, you work with a limited set of timeouts in the NBA, and the NHL, and the NFL, but you can substitute however often you want. And in the NBA, you can treat substitutions like timeouts. So you get that extra time to build into it. So I think if you kind of create that rule in baseball, I'd be really curious to see how, especially the guys that just don't seem to trust their starters and want to care about matchups so much, which I find preposterous. But I think that would add an extra spin to it. The thing about trying to include some things from soccer and the World Cup into golf, I think it'd be harder to do because the only thing you can really do to try to create a more defined time period in which golf takes place is A, either have it as a shotgun start, or B, create a shot clock whereby every player has to abide by it as their group goes, 30 seconds, 45, whatever it is, so that if everyone shoots even par, it's going to take X amount of time for it to unfold. That's the only things you can really do in the sport. So I think maybe some of the other major sports in this country could benefit more, but there's still some things we can do with golf.
All right. Well, obviously we're here to talk golf, so I've been giving this a lot of thought, using the World Cup model as a way to perhaps make some changes in the sport of golf. And so we've talked about this before, and we don't need to get into it today as far as what makes the pace of play so slow, as far as, you know, you have golfers who really like to overthink strategy. But it got me thinking that watching the World Cup, one of the ways to make golf perhaps more tolerable on television is, and I accept the fact that this is not going to happen, but what if you were to eliminate caddies?
So every player has to think for themselves, and they can't spend 2 or 3 minutes getting lined up and talking about the wind and the club.
Yeah, every player is responsible for carrying their own bags, or we can even give them carts. They can, let's not say a cart, but like a hand cart, and they don't have to carry their bag. But it seems to me that part of what golf's problem is that there is so much of a process unfolds between the caddy and the player, and there's so much clubbing and reclubbing and yardage walking, and if you were to eliminate much of that, it would make for a much swifter round of golf. And I understand that this is not like you and I playing at the Muni and just stepping up and hitting the ball. I mean, we don't have anything on the line like these guys do. There's millions of dollars at stake. Their careers at stake. So this is really a difficult sell. But if you're golf and you are, say, really struggling to captivate an audience, you got to shorten up the rounds of golf. One of the ways to do that is to eliminate a lot of the back and forth that players have with caddies.
I think that addresses an issue that not many people think about, that the added stuff that makes golf long. Because, I mean, there's stuff that happens that's directly golf-related that just takes a long time. Like, guys look at a putt on three different sides, and then they do it again, and they take three warm-up putts, and then they get to the ball, they back off, take another three, and then, like, breathe twice, and then hit the putt. And that's for, like, a four-footer. So that's the kind of stuff in golf that takes time, that's golf action. But like you said, with the caddy, you can have unlimited conversation. Pretty much it goes unchecked by the rules officials, conversations that could take way too long. And that stuff does add up. I mean, it takes a lot of time. Now, sometimes it's fascinating to hear it, but it doesn't have to be as long as it does. It could definitely be shortened up.
Yeah, and I mean, we accept the fact that this isn't going to happen. But I do think it's important that if golf wants to really maintain its popularity, especially amongst a wider array of younger people whose attention spans are getting shorter and shorter, or certainly in our culture, it's harder and harder to find things that really will connect with young people. They got to figure out ways to shorten the rounds of golf on TV. And getting rid of the caddy is not something that's going to happen, but there's got to be something out there that can certainly make it more palatable. That's the best thing about the World Cup for me has been that it really is drawing in young people. I mean, I'm sitting there, you know, with my 3-year-old and other young kids, and they're as drawn to it as we are, and that's going to help the sport of soccer grow in this country. So if golf's interested in growing in this country, they've got to make it so that you can play it in a reasonable amount of time, so you can watch it in a reasonable amount of time.
And I think the one thing that soccer has an advantage over pretty much every other sport is that the concept is extremely simple. Kick the ball back and forth until you put in the other person's net. That's the rules. That's it. I mean, there's other stuff, but that's it. And that's great. Little kids can get that. Jimmy, kick the ball into that net. You score. Basketball, yeah. There's 1-2-1, there's 3-2, there's high screen, you know, the high low. I mean, baseball, there's tons of stuff that you have to know. Golf, there's a bazillion rules, there's 14 clubs you all have to figure out, there's different components, different shot types. Golf is such a complicated sport that it's hard to really get into it because you don't understand it. Soccer, everybody gets it. Swimming, everybody gets it. Be the fastest guy to the end of the pool, and you won. I think that's why people get into sports like that, and that's why they kind of get that boost every 4 years via the World Cup or the Olympics, because you'd be an idiot not to get it, so it's easy to get into in the first place.
Yeah, but you said it. We golfers have a way of making it more difficult for themselves, and if you talk to any golfer, whether they be a novice or a pro, they will tell you that it is much what's between the ears as it is anything with your swing. And so, if anything, eliminating the caddies will make the thought process that much easier.
Or take clubs away. Instead of 14 clubs,
yeah,
give them 7.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to worry about whether I'm going to hit a strong 4 or a light 3. You've only got the 4. Figure it out. And maybe that makes golf go a little bit faster because there are fewer decisions to make.
Yeah, I mean, there are endless possibilities, and if we ran golf, there are all sorts of things that we could do to make it more appealing to fans. Let's get back to the Ryder Cup, because the Ryder Cup is the closest thing that golf has to the World Cup. Is that's fair to say, right?
Absolutely.
And I, as someone who follows golf, really do enjoy watching as much of the Ryder Cup as possible. It's unreasonable to expect the Olympics in 2016 to recreate what exists in the Ryder Cup, but how close do you think Rio will get to making golf the type of international competition that arouses patriotism and nationalism, so much of what is appealing with the World Cup?
I don't know. I can't figure out how to make that leap from Ryder Cup to World Cup because, and I think part of it is, we talked about this just a minute ago, the concept of soccer is simple. Soccer is also an everyman sport. You only need the ball and a net. And really, you don't even need the net. You need two things that you can kick in between and agree that it's the net. So the barrier to entry is extremely low. Same thing with swimming. You need trunks and water. And golf, you need clubs, you need equipment, you need clothes, you need a place to play, you need a lot of money, and you need a caddy, apparently. And so it's hard to identify with. This just doesn't come up in everyday life where you're like, let's just grab a golf club and go play golf. You can't do that. You have to go to the club, you have to learn how to play, put down money. Soccer's free. Find an open field and two parking cones, and you've got a soccer field. So I think for the barrier for golf to kind of become a more everyman sport is to scale it back. And I don't know how you do that without ticking off everybody who loves the fact that golf is a kind of an upscale, not everyman sport. So I think that's kind of its biggest barrier to becoming a more globally recognized event. Because, I mean, the guys look, they all dress exactly alike, really nicely. They show up to the pre-event gala in tuxedos with really hot women, and they all have cigars and champagne and rave about what a great life they lead. And that's just not something most people can identify with, even if it's country versus continent, which is an easy draw for anybody. So there's kind of these hindering factors that sit there and you go, well, I can't get behind this. I got other stuff to do. I'm going to go grab a soccer ball and go play some soccer. So I guess that's my fear about golf trying to make any improvements or leap that being in the Olympics will help the sport's popularity, because there are just those barriers to entry that are just not going to compel people to give a crap. So I'd be very curious if we could come back with a – if you and I and a committee of people could reinvent golf as a sport for every human being, regardless of your income level, what it would look like and whether people would be interested in it.
Yeah, a couple points I wanted to touch on there. First, I don't think World Cup athletes are hurting for companionship like professional golfers. So I wouldn't say that there's much of a difference there. But the accessibility of golf does limit the audience, for sure. And the changes you could make to make golf more appealing to a wider array of people are different than the accessibility of soccer. As you've been saying it over and over again, you know, soccer is an incredibly accessible sport. That's part of what makes it such a global game. Golf is not. But, you know, as far as international competitions go and the World Cup, the Ryder Cup and the Olympics with golf, one of the things that's been so appealing in this country with the World Cup has been that the United States in most of their matches were underdogs, and we have been slow to develop our soccer program compared to the rest of the world. So it's kind of really fun and different for an American audience to root for an underdog. And I was thinking that maybe if there were golfers, American golfers that were embraced as underdogs, that would help elevate the status of Americans in international events. Like, if I know Tiger's what moves the needle, but if there were a way to embrace an American team because they were underdogs at the Olympics or the Ryder Cup, maybe that gets us closer to where golf is something that is embraced by a wider audience in this country.
I think that's a good point. I also think you really nailed something there about being an underdog. America doesn't see itself typically as an underdog. In pretty much every competition we're in, we expect to win and win handily. And if we don't, it's an abject failure. But in soccer, we have this understanding that we're really not any good at soccer. And so everything that we do in the World Cup or international soccer competition is kind of treated as a bonus, a nice surprise. Oh, it's like getting a tax refund, you know? And I think that's something that a lot of Americans want to embrace. They want to embrace not having the expectation of kicking everybody's ass. And if they don't, they suck at life. I think that's part of the appeal of the World Cup. So I think that maybe the Americans just getting drilled for the last 20 years of the Ryder Cup actually kind of helps the popularity of the event.
That's where I'm going, yeah.
It's a real foe. I mean, they have somebody who is better than them. And they've proven it again and again and again and again. And I think that that does help the Ryder Cup. I think you're right. I think it does help Americans get into it. Because, like, these guys have beaten us. When's the last time we won the Ryder Cup? 2008.
Right.
And then before that, I mean, it was awful until, you know, from 99, after 99 until then. So we've got two Ryder Cup wins since Tiger Woods is a professional golfer. That's crazy talk.
That's amazing.
But it helped the event.
I think if the United States were smart and they really wanted to drum up as much interest as possible, they play the whole, you know, we are up against the very best. We are not as good as they are. We are the underdogs. I mean, just look at the recent track record. How can you consider us favorites? And as the World Cup has shown with the United States, we really do rally around an underdog. And I think that could be really good for the Americans at the Ryder Cup and really get a lot of people interested, get interested here in this country. But, you know, Americans not being used to being good at something, I think it's good for us to accept our role in the sport of soccer as good but pretty average. And I don't think there's anything wrong with you know, the American prestige being damaged slightly if that is where we are in the game of soccer.
And there's room for it to evolve. I mean, there's already the expectation that 4 years from now in Russia, the United States are going to be a juggernaut. I don't know where that came from, but I've seen it all over the place from my friends that follow soccer very intimately. And I wonder about the danger of expectation, where this is really the one big sport we suck at and want to be good at. And what if we get good at it? I mean, let's say the unthinkable happens and we win the 2018 World Cup. Then what? Do we become a soccer country or go, oh, we can't, our B-plus athletes conquered the world sport. We're done with this. Or does America need to struggle and struggle and struggle until some generation of youth decides they're going to be the ones to take up the cross and figure out how to beat the rest of the world? At what point does America stop caring if they get too good at soccer?
A couple things. One, we're not that bad.
We're not that bad, but relative to other sports in the world, we suck.
Correct. We're behind the best in the world, but we're not that far behind. Belgium was a better team from start to finish. I don't think anyone would deny that yesterday, but we're not that far behind. And we play about as hard as any team that I noticed. And I do think there is really something to be said about when we get good at the sport of soccer, like let's say 2018, some of these young guys like, you know, Julian Green and John Brooks and some of the other guys, when we do emerge as perhaps a favorite, who knows, I do think you'll see attitudes and perceptions about the national team change, because so much of what we embrace with this team in this World Cup has been that we are underdogs. And with golf, you know, the United States produces some of the best golfers in the world. So we are, in general, a powerhouse when it comes to golf. In order for perhaps to get the underdog mentality in this country for golf, we'd have to go through a bit of a dry spell where there really isn't any good American golfers for quite some time, so that there is that sense of we're not expected to do much, yet we're going to catch up eventually. And that's just not where we stand in golf. But maybe it should be with the Ryder Cup, because as you said, we haven't won in a long time.
Well, maybe tennis is going to be a good example. I mean, I've been watching Wimbledon the last week and a half, and the thing that I've noticed is that, I mean, obviously anyone who's paid attention to sports in general, but is a tennis fan, there are no Americans in the final 16 for the first time in a century. A century.
That's amazing.
That's crazy.
Is that right?
Since 1911, there had been at least one long time, they only had 16 at Wimbledon. But that means for the first time in 103 years, Americans were wiped out after the round after the round 32, which is wild. And so I think we're going to start to see, I think you can kind of see by who's winning and who's losing at Wimbledon, there's kind of a changing the guard happening here, and it seems like a lot of tennis is going toward the former Soviet bloc, Eastern Europe. That seems to kind of be the tennis powerhouse these days. And America is just kind of in this dredge period where there's not an up-and-coming American. There's not a guy who's even a threat to win a major. There's not, other than Serena, who's on the downside, not really an American that's a threat. And so maybe we'll find out in the next couple of years, golf will, that's an individual sport, from tennis, what it's like to kind of have a dearth of talent in this country and what that might mean for fans who are clamoring for an American to root for.
And well,
or even another example, and I'll cede the point, is the LPGA this year has been nothing but Americans winning, basically. I mean, right. It's just trading back and forth between Stacey Lewis, Michelle Wee, Paula Creamer, and some other folks, but mostly it's been Americans just taking names. And you've seen the ratings go up tremendously because Americans like rooting for Americans. So I don't know if that's a direct example or a direct correlation or not, but I'm wondering if it is.
It gets me thinking about how to make the Ryder Cup even more appealing. And if we ran golf, which, depending on who's listening, could be a distinct possibility, but if we ran golf, perhaps one of the things you could change with the Ryder Cup was make it where you allow other countries to participate and you had to qualify for something like the Ryder Cup. So it was no guarantee that it was even going to be the United States and Europe. That could be really cool, because then if the United States isn't producing quality golfers, then we don't play. And then we miss out on a few cycles, and then we work our way to get back in it. And hey, look, we haven't been in it for 20 years, but we're here this year. That's a way to generate even more interest in the Ryder Cup.
And I think we might see a little bit of that concept in a month when the LPGA does its international crown for the first time. It's in here in Maryland at Caves Valley. And they have 8 countries that qualified, 8 teams with 4 players. You know, they kind of mess up with the qualification process because they declare the teams too early. So Michelle Wee's not on the American team, believe it or not.
Interesting.
But I think that idea may translate. So we'll see if other countries that are big in women's golf that didn't make it get mad and want to be inspired to be a part of the next one and the next one and the next one. Because I've thrown out the idea of what you said before, kind of having almost a round robin, so to speak. Kill the President's Cup and have 3 teams. The U.S., the rest of the world, and Europe. And the winner of the Ryder Cup gets to stay and play the person that didn't play. And maybe make more teams than this, but basically create it so that you kind of have winners. You play winners kind of like you would on the basketball court at your park until you lose. And then you get a chance to play. So I think that might be an interesting concept, but I've thrown it on Twitter before and people poo-poo and they're like, no, we need the Ryder Cup and we need the President's Cup and you can't put the two together. It's like water and oil. And I think people are just kind of so bent into shape about things being a certain way. They're not willing to try something different, see what happens.
Well, I mean, I certainly think that there are a lot of good ideas and we've covered some of them and we could continue to go on and on about how to make the game of golf more accessible. And that's part of what the World Cup has taught me about soccer and how to really make sports more appealing to a wider array of people. But for now, we got to go. Ryan Valenci, golfnewsnet.com. Thanks for the time as always.
Thanks, John.